Live from Los Angeles, this is the Bachelor Masters, no longer handcuffed by the Bachelorette. Bachelor in Paradise is on its own. How about that, EZR?
You sound excited for the first time in so long about Bachelor franchise.
Yes, it's always about this time of year. Funny how that works.
It's funnier and more dramatic than either Bachelor or Bachelorette. I don't care how fake it is, too. I don't care if it's fake. I like it.
Well, fake or real aside, this seems like a more sinister cast than we've ever seen before. That's the only word I can think to describe it.
You guys are falling for it. You're both falling for it.
Did you say more sinister?
Yes, yeah, sinister.
I gotta hear about this.
Well, not to use the phrase, here for the right reasons, because that means something else. Like, you know when someone does something stupid, you say, oh, well, he means well, or she means well. So even Chad, right, is obnoxious and physical as he could get. He still kind of had a goofy side to him, and you're like, oh, you know, that's just Chad. But with the villains and the sort of overall cast, just what we've seen in the last few episodes here, I don't feel that same well-meaning side of any of them. They all seem very sinister.
Because they're creation.
Well, they haven't been before.
Crafted. They're crafted.
This Chris Muppet, right? Duck or whatever his name is.
The Goose.
Goose.
I mean, he's... I like that you'll refuse to call him by that. Yeah. Don't even give him the respect.
Exactly. He's just horrible on every level. He doesn't have any qualities that I find interesting. You've mentioned that in the past, Chris. Our Chris. The Chris right here. Colton's got nothing going on upstairs. And the girls all seem after each other right away.
Yeah. ECR, I know you can see the centers of social power sometimes. Especially, I think, last Bachelor in Paradise with some of the women on the show. So do you see any of that this season?
To kind of go out a little bit, I think what you're actually seeing, Craig, is the fact that they are all these manufactured products. And so the real center of power, well put, is like, you know, the producers. And I think that's what you're seeing is a byproduct of them steering this and the characters not knowing their motivation. Chris, you're a writer. Like, that's how they all came off this way. They had no reason to act the way they did, but they did.
How is it any different than the last four seasons of Bachelor in Paradise?
I could give you, we'll go through the examples throughout the podcast. So,
well, they're definitely trying to make the Tia Colton story the main focus, but we thought they would going into this series, right? And last season of Bachelor in Paradise, it was Dean messing the two women around, right? So it seems like they want to kind of know what their main story is going to be going into the season, because then if nothing really happens, at least you're hanging your hat on one main story. So that's where I think I do continue to see the artifice with that. But I think I sort of accept the Colton Tia thing as like, well, in case everything went wrong, that's like the arc of this season.
Usually one of the big arcs touches on all the other different characters and sort of brings out good and bad. But the Tia Colton thing, I think it went differently than they could have imagined. I mean, Twitter is all on Colton's side. I think three of us are on Colton's side. And I don't think they expected that to be the case when they went into it. They wanted Tia to be the hero. Mm. And then she would corral all of the females into a group. And they'd be all supportive of each other. And, you know, the guys would be able to go after Colton.
See, but here's the big difference. Chris is talking right now about Dean. And Dean was not on Bachelor in Paradise as a redemption story. He looked like a man-child. Right, on Rachel's season, but it wasn't too obvious. You knew he was hurt. And then he went on Bachelor in Paradise, and every girl thought he was good looking. And then this situation that's very true set up, this very real to life set up in front of him, right? He had a really hot girl he liked, and then he had a girl that he connected with a lot because they had similar upbringings, or they both lacked love in their life. So they were looking for each other. They were desperate. That's something that's totally natural. And I don't think it was much of a setup. Maybe the setup is that they brought someone in that they knew he would immediately fall for, or I guess a lot of guys did. The difference here, again, going back to what I was saying last week, is that this is so not believable. And the only reason I'm on Colton's side, or I'm guessing a lot of people subconsciously are on Colton's side, is because they're trying to vilify him and make Tia this sympathetic character. And they're both guilty as far as I'm concerned. But if they're going to blame one over the other, I want it to be equal.
Does that go back to the fact that, and ECR, you might be completely right on this, as you are with a lot of Bachelor-related things, but that you have sources to follow outside of the show that make you feel like it's more manufactured than the Dean? I mean, it's impossible to prove that one is actually more manufactured than the other. I could think of 100 hypothetical situations where the Dean situation last season is just as manufactured as what we see this season, but I'm not on social media to see how well they sell, you know, the like the backstory on these things. So is it that they're just not selling it as well on the internet?
No, I don't think it has anything to do with the internet, because both times I was, even now, I am so, I look at things, but I don't really read into things or look up things. But I will tell you that my reason for thinking this has more to do with reactions and actual true to life things that are happening. You guys told me. I'll
it doesn't seem like there's any evidence in the episode themselves, though. You could see Dean coming in last season and say, oh, you know what? I'm with Christina right now, but I'm not really that interested, saying that off camera to a producer and them exploiting that right away. That's something that could easily happen.
Yeah, that is exploitable because it's a true emotion. But here's my, like, I don't want to say it's evidence, but here's my inkling that it's not true. So you tell me that a bunch of bros corner Colton and say, hey, bro, you're not in love with her. Why are you?
They always have interventions like that, including
and these aren't your standard bros either.
They have interventions to get a leg up, but that isn't that.
I'm not following. That isn't that. What isn't what? What do you mean?
Okay, so when you have when you corner someone on The Bachelorette, when a bunch of bros corner another bro in on The Bachelorette and say, hey man, you're not being sincere, there is a point there, right? They're trying to like out someone and they think it gives them a something with The Bachelorette. It gives them some kind of cred, it gives them some kind of point. Here there is no prize that they're gonna get.
And I disagree.
Really?
Yeah, there's kind of points to score with looking strong, you know, on TV or, you know, staying around on the island. Jordan, I think if he's here for rehabilitation, the last two episodes have done wonders for him. I think even if you hate him, he's much more interesting in the little triangles he's getting into. And I think that's a lot because he's willing to go along with these schemes and he's socially ingratiated himself way more here than he ever did on The Bachelorette. So I think it's working for him.
Yeah. And I think that one's kind of a lie too, but I'll get to that. But here's the thing. Okay. You get cornered as a bro. You two bros, tell me. Uh-huh. You get cornered as a bro. And Colton had plenty of times where his actual self, I mean, he's a football player. Uh-huh. You don't get more bro than that, right? Where he would have been serious?
Let me see if I understand here. Ezer, you're saying that everything we saw this week is manufactured. When it comes to the Colton TS thread line.
Well, and more, you're saying more so manufactured than ever before.
Yes.
Disputing that it's manufactured. It's like with going back to our last season of Bachelorette. It's that you're saying this is somehow superlatively manufactured. I disagree with.
And yes. Ezra, you're also saying that you wouldn't buy that Duck, Jordan, and the other guy.
And Nick, right? The blonde one that got cut. The blonde guy cut.
So Nick
was in on that group.
So you wouldn't buy that those three would do the intervention like that normally without it being manufactured?
Yes, that's true. I don't think they would. I don't think they would have pushed it. And thirdly, I don't think Colton would have stood there and just listened and like let the drama keep playing out.
Well, here's what I think. I don't know what I think. I'm just speaking off the top of my head. But Colton isn't the brightest pea in the pod. And he proved that towards the end of the second episode here where he talks to Tia about Duck. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Colton would just sit there and not say anything. But in terms of the intervention, I think we have to look at it. It was Duck's intervention. It really had nothing to do with Jordan and other guy. They just were there for the ride. It might appear that there was the three of them, and Jordan has a way of weaseling himself into things that make it appear that he's part of it, but really he's not. He's just really good at centering attention on himself. It was really Duck being Duck, which is to be viewing the world through a completely different lens than the rest of us, thinking he's much more desirable than he is to the opposite sex, and a litany of other not good qualities that led to that whole confrontation. First of all, I think in the bro hierarchy, somebody who plays for NFL teams probably tops the list. Doc lives in this fantasy world that is rivaled only by Annalise's fantasy world, and could very well try to do a bro intervention with Colton because he just doesn't see it the same way the rest of us do.
Okay, so you think that that's the motivation, that each one of them has their own intrinsic motivation, Nick included, who had really nothing to do on the whole show.
I don't even include Nick in anything.
Such a beta that Duck showing he's alpha. He was about to die. He was on death's doorstep. So that's why I could see him being like, yeah, I'm going to try and get in with anyone or anything that I can.
Okay. It was Duck versus Colton. The other guy doesn't even exist, and like Chris said, and Jordan is an X factor that it doesn't follow any logical patterns when it comes to centering focus on himself.
Because I thought the thing with Jordan was he has no friends. He, to use Craig's term from past seasons, he got a good PR agent who said, look, when you go on Bachelor in Paradise, your goal is going to be to show you can make friends. And this walked in, you know, he was introduced to this. So he's, because yeah, you never feel he has any conviction when he talks about this. He just agrees with anything. Yeah. And is like,
and that's a good way to make friends, or to appear that you're making friends, is just find conflict, side with the one that looks like they're winning. And you know that once Duck gets removed, then he's going to find his way to siding with Colton on some other thing.
So you guys are telling me that the possible motivation of these bros is to get more airtime, get some friendships going, nothing to do with Tia. Let's just say that might be it.
No,
right?
That's not what I'm saying at all.
No?
No. So let's look at the three stakeholders here. So get rid of other guy. The three stakeholders are Colton, Duck, and Jordan. Jordan fits what you just said. Jordan's playing his game that was laid out by his PR agent that he hired for an hour before he came on the show. He's an X factor. We can't think of him as part of this bro thing because he doesn't. He's playing his own game. So that just leaves Duck and Colton. Duck absolutely is doing a bro intervention because in his fantasy world, he plays for the NFL. He's the starting quarterback for the New England Patriots, and he's like, thinks he can take down Colton. He doesn't see himself in the mirror when he looks in a mirror.
He thinks he's the main character of that Top Gun ripoff named Duck.
But exactly. How does a bro, even if you think you're so self-important, would you really talk to someone about messing with another girl's feelings? First off, it's not even true.
Yes.
Secondly, would you do that?
Yes, but if you're Duck. Yeah,
he did it last season on The Bachelorette.
Yeah, he's clearly got some neuroses, if that's the right word, when it comes to women, too. So you got to factor that in. He has a way of interacting with women. And you saw how he talked about women at the end there. I mean, that's gross. He thinks of women poorly, and his vision of him to women, like how he thinks women see him, is totally misguided. And so in his view, Tia was his. And so he had a leg to go, you know, to be like, Colton, you got to back off. And he even said in those interviews, the one-on-ones or whatever, I'm bringing Colton down. You know, he's going to be out of here. Well, that's exactly not what's happening.
Okay. There's that motivation. And then there's the producer's motivation, which I think is super clear cut. And while I do understand the Chris thing, I think that's a little involved for producers to manufacture. And I do think they used him in a way because he is kind of vulnerable to be used. You know, they tell him, you know, Colton's after your girl, man.
Right, yeah.
Make a plan here.
It's probably not hard to get him agitated in a one-on-one interview.
He's a little pit bull. He's emotionally unstable, and he has a lot of issues, and he's a hothead, you know. So
right.
Colton, on the other hand, their motivation of using him is that they're trying to officially get him out of the running for The Bachelor. They're trying to save Tia for some reason. Like, maybe they want to make her the Bachelorette someday because they promised it to her. Or maybe there's some kind of promise somewhere. And they're trying to... Sometimes I wonder if they do these things because they can. Not even because they want a point. But they're just trying to make us believe some storyline. And I gotta tell you, my only justification for this is Nick the Bachelor. Nick, you know, curly brown hair, yes. Blonde beard Nick. He was the Chris and Jordan combined of his bachelorette season. And then not as much on Caitlin's season, but more so on Andy's. He was a mega dick. You would not believe this guy. He was, not only was he a dick, but he was also smug. So he was that Jordan-ness type. He was also would get mad, and we all know he said, "Why'd you have sex with me then?" You know, he had that line.
Right.
So, I mean, I think the producer's motivations are just a lot more clear to me. And what you're saying about Chris is totally, I think these two can line up. I don't think there's direct overlap on our theories, but I do think there's some alignment so that they can make sense together. But I just think the producers are just messing with us, and it just makes me mad every day now. That's where I sit on it. But I have, even with other storylines, I think it's spilling over. I think they've gone mad with power. And we'll talk about the other storylines.
Okay. if it's to believe that they knew where they were going with the Tia Colton story, and they knew that Tia basically going to unravel her support network. I mean, I would say 98% of people on Twitter are on Colton's side now. If they knew that was the outcome, then absolutely producers are in control, and the questions you're raising are totally true. And like, why are they wielding this kind of power? But if they weren't in control of that situation, it kind of laid out, and maybe they thought Tia was going to come out of this the female lead, and we're all going to rally behind her, then it backfired, right?
Yes. It just feels like their crappy attempts at this humor with Wills and now Yuki. It's so devoid of the real Bachelor in Paradise. It really feels like they jumped the shark and we're watching a copy of a copy. You know,
now, Wells was on last season. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you're saying that he has a different or bigger role, or that's emblematic of more humor they have this season?
Wait, were you talking about Wills or Wells?
Wells the bartender. No, I'm saying that the fact that they have to fill, I feel like I watched 10, realistically, maybe 7 minutes of Wells just talking, trying to be funny. And I feel that's filler because they have no real drama.
I feel like we're either watching different episodes or I'm drastically misremembering, because I feel like his role is so much small. I feel like last season they had, after every date, someone would go up to Wells and he would be the shoulder they're crying on. And he's been in like one montage this season.
I think they're setting it up for him to be bigger, but right now he's in it way too much.
He's barely at all.
He's making fun of Chris doing a Karate Kid thing. He's learning to bartend. Him and Yuki are making drinks together. I mean,
they're doing what you're saying easier, but with Yuki. And I was actually I was thinking about tweeting this, but it just didn't sound right. It wasn't ironic enough to be funny, but it got me thinking. Can you culturally appropriate your own culture?
Yuki did that?
Well, she's like a caricature of the caricature of Japan. And I don't find it amusing.
No, I know what you mean. I think I had made a comment to this effect back in Winter Games, because it is tricky. I would want to know what Japanese or Japanese American people thought, because that was the exact thought I had. Is it offensive as an American for me to be laughing at the shtick she's doing, because it seems so much like someone doing, if she weren't Japanese, it would seem like minstrel show kind of thing of someone doing that for Japanese culture.
Yeah, she doesn't speak any English, like any English at all.
Well,
and so
in that
she's
case,
just
the producers,
trying to communicate.
Well, the producers then know exactly what they're doing by putting her on.
Because I've met plenty of Japanese people who don't speak any English, and they don't act like Yuki at all. They don't
a colorful character, right?
Well, there is a Japanese subculture that is, I would put, I mean, I'm not an expert, but I would put Yuki into that. It's so over the top that, like Chris just said, I just feel bad laughing.
I mean,
it
was tricky on the Winter Games, especially because that was supposed to be international representation. I think she was the only person from Japan, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And so that was the thing where it was sort of, Now, I know this was more on the show probably for seeming like they're representing culture, you know, different cultures. But that was why I especially felt bad there, where it's like, wow, this is supposed to be about bringing all of these cultures together and, you know, inclusiveness. And
Canada
the one,
and America.
It's like, yeah, the one Japanese representation we have here is Yuki. Yeah. I don't know.
Right. So I don't know how this plays into your point. Yeah, there was a Chinese. Yeah, I don't know how this plays into your point, though. EZR, which is, I mean, we got diverted. I do feel that that the attempts at comedy always fail on Bachelor in Paradise. It's funny on its own, so they don't need that Will's type situation, that stuff they have. And I think it came about because the previous bartender,
Jorge,
actually was kind of a lovable person, and they probably had him in there pragmatically, and then he turned into
character. Yeah.
And so they try to replicate that. But it's funny on its own, so we don't need those. So that I totally agree with. And Yuki just complicates it even more.
Well, do you remember that the reason Wells had... Well, we're looking at the whole Bachelor of Paradise season 2. And right now we're only 2 or 3 episodes into Bachelor in Paradise. And I feel like they're overusing him. So we'll see at the end, I guess, if they did or didn't. But last year, he also had his own storyline where he kissed that girl. So they kind of had to give that storyline a little bit of space.
She had to go fly to Africa to... work in a hospital.
Yeah, makes sense.
We did a pretty funny bit on that. Think back on the best moments in Bachelor Masters history. Like, our little bit on that, I thought was pretty funny, but of course I can't remember any of the details, but someday when we make our archive, I'll make sure to put that in there. I think we got to move on, but
okay,
you definitely get the final word here, because we're not giving you the right comeuppance on what you're trying to say here, because the point you're making isn't being received correctly from Chris and I quite yet.
These are all, bricks in my giant argument that I feel everything is now manufactured.
Right.
This is not in any way, the Wells thing is not a point. The Tia Colton thing is, I feel like there are, the bro off is another piece of evidence to me. But there are lots of things that I will say throughout. But my premise, so that you guys have it clear, is that it's completely manufactured now. And it's not making me sad. It's making me mad with them, because they just need you put 20 attractive people and bring in more, or however many there are, and you will find fights, natural ones, ones that could be explained through DM screenshots, if they really want, if there's something deeper there. But they don't trust us, or they don't want, they want the average viewer. I feel like they're substituting, they're creating depth by having a long storyline, but they're not actually creating real emotional depth.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, okay, there's enough drama as it is, why do they need to manufacture it? Let's make that our thesis statement.
Okay.
But let's look at a few people that don't necessarily fit into that, and I'm curious how that changes or works with the theory here.
Mm-hmm.
So Annalise, who we're looking at right now on our unofficial sponsor Hulu's playback, she lives in a fantasy world not that different than Ducks. I don't think there was any need to manufacture any of that. There's no way you can prompt somebody to say in like the first sentence describing a new person they met that, oh, he'll make a great husband.
Yeah. And I'll tell you how that, and you're right. And this is what really bugs me, is that do you think that Jordan would be interested in Annalise?
Yes.
Really, Jordan?
Yes.
That does not seem like his type at all. And I'm not just saying,
but I think that's a fundamental misunderstanding of Jordan's personality. Jordan is not necessarily there because he legitimately wants to love someone. He's there for image rehabilitation. So of course he would be interested in someone like Annalise right away, because that's a great mark.
There's something to analyze in the fact that the show did not make a big deal out of the fact that moments before he was backing Duck in his argument against Colton for playing Tia, supposedly. And then he goes and immediately plays Annalise for Jenna. Right? So the fact that they didn't even bring that up, maybe there's a point where they're like, we don't need to manufacture anything because this Jordan triangle is interesting on in its own right, because Annalise is making it interesting because she lives in a fantasy world.
Yeah, she's unhinged. We've all seen that 10 people, what is it total? Maybe 20 people go to paradise throughout a season and four of them get engaged and have kids in the history of Bachelor in Paradise. And she's like, I want that story. Right. So that's already
Jaden Tanner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's definitely unhinged. You know, she wants her this and that. And all these things she's saying are like, what did she say? Where she was like, there's no best feeling than sitting around and living in your own little world with your boyfriend and being so in love. And all the girls around her are like, yeah. And I was like, that's the best feeling, is not to know anything about, like, you know, to like be cocooned, or in my feeling, like trapped in a little, you know, that just felt super trapping to me. And if that's her attitude, right. So she's already unhinged. And then they made Jordan go after her instead to Jordan, tell the camera you are looking forward to meeting Annalise. And he's like, who? And then she's like, that one girl that cried twice because of the most normal things you see at a fair, you know, like
Annalise.
Yeah, she cried about bumper cars and dogs and something.
Was she the bumper car person or the?
She's the bumper car.
She was both. She cried about a lot of past traumas, including bumper cars and birds.
Was it bumper cars or was it the demolition derby?
It was demolition derby, but it reminded her of bumper cars.
Okay. I was at the Orange County Fair this last weekend, and I saw demolition derby. I'm just gonna leave that there.
The Jordan situation with Annalise and Jenna was exactly what I was thinking of when let me step back a second here, because I think, again, with what you're saying, ECR, I don't necessarily disagree, but that things are manufactured. But I think where I stand and what we've disagreed on before is that I think they've always been highly manufactured, and I still don't really see any proof. And I don't think you've had any examples that suggest that it's more manufactured. I think that they're, in all previous seasons, it's got lots of places where you manufacture some things. There's lots of prodding and producers hinting at people to do certain things. And then genuine things come out of that. So I was going to point to the Jordan, Annalise, Jenna thing as like, that's to me, I think there's a lot of behind the scenes work that's leading to something that's pretty genuine there. So I'm not looking at the Colton Tia stuff as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, that seems like that's pre-scripted, that we can just is on autopilot in case they didn't get anything else. But we're seeing these other moments where it's like, yeah, they're prodding people to do certain things, but there's some interesting dynamics coming out of that.
So season one, Bachelor in Paradise. Now, Chris, it's not really fair because it's just a very strong example. I can't say I know there are more than one, but this is my strongest example. So season one, Bachelor in Paradise, there had been two people that had, I guess, DM'd each other before.
This brought in the show? Because this is my point about extra textual kind of stuff.
It was talks to, it was analyzed like crazy in the show because it was it was such a crazy thing that happened. I'll find out their names in a second. But basically what happened is that there was a single mom on the show, and she just, you know, was striking out with lots of guys. Then one guy was like, oh yeah, you know, pick me. And he was a, you know, hot guy or whatever. And, you know, we'll get along so great. And he kissed her. And then finally the girl he was waiting for came down the steps. And he was like, oh, good, she's here, dumping the single mom. And everyone freaked out. And the girl that he was with, he was like totally like had just was so, I don't know, sex crazed about her. And these were two...
That sounds highly manufactured, though.
No, well, what ended up happening was that
The producers saw that he would be interested in this one woman. They're like, let's send her in to break this couple up. Boom, we manufactured that. We've manipulated this to happen. Well,
right, kind of, except for the fact that they had DM'd each other before, and the girl had told him...
I bet everyone's DMing now.
Yeah, they are.
But well, I think that's kind of to EZR's point, is that if we can create a scenario here, the first couple seasons about Bachelor in Paradise, the producer's hand was who they send in and when. That was their ability to create drama. And I don't think there's anything wrong with sending in people strategically. That's sort of the gist of the show.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think maybe EZR is suggesting that in a world where they're now all DMing, now that we're in season 5, it's not ingenuous of the producers to not be creating a space to have those DMs be part of the show, because they are such a big part of the show now. They should be revealing them or working them in, as opposed to manufacturing a bunch of storylines within it that sort of recreate what the DMs have already caused. Right.
I guess that goes back to my original question of, is it that the internet is not selling this as well, or the internet and the show aren't lining up? Because that I would buy. I don't really have as much exposure to that, but I could see that as a valid argument. But ECR, you had said last time we talked, I think, that you had already seen social media evidence that means Colton and Tia are already much more involved than they let on in the show. So that's what I thought, that you were comparing what you know online against the artifice of the show. I think if I didn't know any of that, I would think, okay, this seems a little bit forced and artificial, but if I had no other context clues and the story went a different way, I'd potentially believe that. So it's just sort of the manufactured stuff on screen without any internet evidence. I don't think that there's evidence that it's any more or less. I think it's only when you bring in the internet it seems like we're getting at.
Well, you know, I saw one picture, and I try not to read anything because I don't like spoilers, but I do like the truth about a storyline. So what the one picture I saw was from Reality Steve, who showed a picture of Tia sitting on Colton's lap sometime between their first date and Bachelor in Paradise. So everything they're saying is a lie, right? That they've only met once already, before.
That colors your perception, wait, where you're already looking for these things in a much different way than if you hadn't seen that.
Yeah, right. But I'm sure there's a lot more evidence than that.
But, yeah, which might be true, but it's still stemming from that original bias that you're sure there's a lot more because you have that original bias that there must be a lot more.
Yeah, but it makes me, yes.
It makes and you it question
also,
everything.
It also, right, it makes me want to dig deeper into the truth rather than listen to their storyline.
You're like Fox Mulder of Bachelor Nation.
Because I can see both these things being true. It's like when you start a new franchise, Bachelor in Paradise, a few years ago. Okay, you don't have any of this incestuous stuff that we complain about on Bachelor and Bachelorette. So everything is going to have to be generated just by new people being sent in. But when you get to whatever we're on, the fourth or fifth season, it's like you can start to have these manufactured storylines because you're trying to connect it to all of your other franchises. So it makes sense that that would happen to me. I'm just trying to pin down specifically. I don't think we've come up with specific moments in the show that point to it being manufactured. Most of the stuff we point to is either anecdotal or is on the internet. And well, that's my point. I don't think we have moments in the show that are different from previous seasons. It's like, I feel this way because I saw this picture online, or because I think that no one would act this. It's sort of very subjective opinion things, and not really like, they did this or they showed this. Well, it's not really there in the proof.
Let me tell you how that story ends, just so I can round out this thing, because at this time I was not looking up nothing I read or saw was not from an ABC source. Everything was from an ABC source of the story that I'm telling you about season 1 Bachelor in Paradise, right?
Yeah.
The guy goes on the camera. I'm going to remember his name. He has a name like Chase or something like that. He's a big beefy dude. And he said, this girl, she was like a total vixen, like black hair, blue eyes, you know, one of these like hot, like the hottest thing ever for guys. And he went on camera and said, she told me to wait until she got here and to do anything I can to stay. So then they're hooking up on the show, but the girl's getting too much crap thrown her way too. They're like, how could you do this? How could you be with this guy? So she tries to play like, I don't know why he acted that way. He doesn't have to act that way for me. So remember there was a show at one time called like After Paradise. It was just like a wrap up show, like After Talking Paradise. Dead. Yeah, it was Michelle Collins and a few other people. And they would talk about the thing. Right. So the guy, for his own sanity, I think went on and was like, I'm not crazy. I'm not the only villain here. He printed out every DM and every exchange they had, electronic exchange they had, into a gigantic book and said, here is my book. I'm not lying. We had decided this together. I don't know why I'm the villain. And it was just like a mess because no one listened to him. And even to this day, I don't remember his name, but if you see his face and Bachelor for fans see him, they will consider him the villain. And he tried his, I considered that it was both of them. And I don't know. Anyways, I forget what you asked for proof for, but that was to me proof that there was a real story there. That was, oh, that's what it was. That it was not manufactured. This was something that actually happened. You know, everyone's emotions got involved. And I think, I thought it was real. I thought even the attempt, right, the attempt at like, you know, at correcting his, whatever, I mean, was real.
I haven't seen that, but I just judging by what you're saying, I would say it's a slightly different argument, though. You're arguing how compelling the drama is, and that doesn't really go to how manufactured it is. You could still have a highly manufactured situation with lots of compelling emotions that come out from all of these, and you feel it's more compelling, and then you have something in season four here that's also very manufactured, and the emotions are just a little more flat. No, and that's what I think you're saying a little bit more.
No, because I think a lot of people weren't compelled by that. That was a storyline I remember.
But you think it was, right? But I'm saying your opinion is you thought that that was compelling. You just said must see TV, didn't you?
No,
I said must see TV. Yeah,
but so you didn't like that either. So, and I don't know what your argument is here.
Well, can we just say that Tia, if Tia were, you know, like a track star and this was the Olympics, she would have stumbled out of the starting blocks because we had all the setup here, fake or not fake, for a good story. And then it just fell flat, mostly because Tia was rubbing him for all the wrong reasons.
Well,
she's also a little more of a flat personality, I think, too, compared to some other people. Like, if you're going to hang a kind of a storyline on her. She doesn't do big emotions and what. She's sort of a little like Becca that way, I think.
Right. Yes.
Well, don't you think that at the very least, well, here's the thing, is that the producer's narrative was that poor single mom got, you know, railroaded by this couple. But the narrative I took away that I do think is compelling that was there and that was presented but maybe wasn't hammered home was that this guy got treated way worse than the girl who was in on it, and she was a lot more... She was a lot more crafty with her way of reacting to it, and I don't think there was any real false. I mean, there was her being false. There was a lot of issues there, but I do think it was for the most part raw. So
yeah, I think that's still potentially very manufactured but compelling emotions. I still think that
a lot of people didn't see it. That's kind of my issue.
But you did. So that's your argument that you're making. You thought it was compelling. It's not really what other people thought. I'm saying you think that was more compelling and that this isn't, which I could agree with that. But the argument, I think we're just misusing the word manufactured here. I think we're squishing some things together. Yeah, exactly. I think what Craig said was interesting, where I can see that the way things were manufactured in the past might have been different, where it's like we're going to manufacture outcomes, whereas now we're trying to manufacture the setup, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I could see that, but that requires that extra textual kind of element where it's like, well, what are we looking at to know that? It's a little different.
Right.
That I could see, and that could be a little less satisfying. But I don't see... I'm just highly skeptical when we talk about The Bachelor or anything related to it and it being manufactured. Of course, it's been highly manufactured since the beginning. I don't know why anyone's surprised at these things. Most manufactured, maybe American politics is the only thing more manufactured than the Bachelor franchise.
Right, but then let's deconstruct what we mean every time when we say manufactured. That doesn't mean deconstruct
my head is gonna explode.
Every single time. I'm saying say what actually is happening. For example, them bringing people down strategically, sure, that's manufactured, but that's fine. That's part of the show. We expect that. But them telling someone to, they're giving someone a line, is a different animal.
Implying that the producer is sitting with Duck and saying, oh, did you know that Tia said these amazing things about you? That would be manufacturing if she didn't in fact say those or didn't say it in that way.
I guess to that, I would say it's less productive to go down. It's like conspiracy theories there. We could never prove those. So that's why I'm saying, oh, it's interesting if you say you think a producer did, or it feels more fake here. But I would just be more careful to say, oh, that's what I feel. We would never be able, unless a producer said, I literally told them to say this. We're always just saying, oh, it seems more fake here, or this is what could have happened. We're all just theorizing.
What we need is a university course where we do a close reading of bachelor's.
Wait, seasons. ECR just said kind of. Where do you have 100% proof on that thing?
It's not like, 100% proof, but it's 90% proof. If someone's
No, it's not. It's either 100 or it's a theory. You're just having strong opinions. That's just what I would say. It's like you feel one's more compelling or you don't, but you don't have any special insight or sort. You don't have your deep throat that's telling you.
Right.
So you could be wrong.
But what, I mean, if someone's looking at the camera and it looks like they're actually reciting a line.
No, you could be wrong. There's tons of times when people are wrong. They see what people say and they're wrong. That's what you think. And I think, but that's my point, is we can't say that that's proof. That's not proof. That's different. We're looking at them and saying that's what we think, but it's not proof.
How do you quantify emotions? Because
you don't. That's my point.
Yeah. Well, you do and you don't, right? On The Bachelor in Paradise, you can. You absolutely can.
No, you can't.
You can't.
No. Why? Because you have special powers when you're
because
watching
they're
Bachelor
on
in Paradise?
TV, and they're supposedly, they're, you know, whatever they are.
You're
when they're
on TV where everyone is more fake by about 100%, I would say, on a good day, even when they're seeming real. We saw this just with Leo. You know, Leo seems great on camera, and now we've got stories about potentially bad behavior. We might not like how certain people have dealt with, you know, that, but I think that at least we can say, I think Leo was a great actor. I think that that's a great example there. So I don't think we can look and say, oh, someone seems more, you know, that's about, I would say, it's like eyewitness testimony. It's wrong so much of the time. It's good for a starting, maybe to kind of put people in a vicinity or an area. It's like a good starting point. It's not proof.
I can stay up all night and watch their reactions and rewind and then play again and be like, look at this little, that's how I feel. I feel like a crazy all-nighter conspiracy theorist.
Just someone else could do the same thing and think that they're just as right as you and have just a keen and exacting eye and have the opposite conclusion, though. And that's the problem.
I feel like I'm going into like Hegelian like dialectics by explaining that there are things that human nature knows about other humans. I mean, I can say like, absolutely, I'm walking in with a clean slate and this person's doing this and I don't know if it's authentic or not, but we all have some sense of what's true or not, whether we want to
say. Yeah, and we're often wrong.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think we are. I mean, if you're talking about a murder, maybe that's different. But if we're talking about just authenticity, I think
if people were right, then we would have a much higher success of relationships, of people understanding each other, of people, you know.
Okay.
I think that we have a lot of dysfunction to show that people often think they're right and they're wrong. And that's what The Bachelor's about, too,
right,
in a lot of ways.
That happens when you have stake in the issue that you're dealing with. When you don't,
I thought you meant
don't.
Like actual stake.
No.
Yeah, when you have stake, you're hungry.
You think it's
powers.
Cooked medium rare, but it's actually cooked medium.
But ECR, even on your own terms, you contradict yourself with these points all the time. You don't have any proof for any of these things.
No.
You say you do, and you have details, and then you say, I can't remember, or I don't have any examples.
That was season one. But what about the fact that we just saw a Colton Tia argument with just what we know about the world, right? And even Craig said that on Twitter, the more than just the majority, 90% are on Tia's side, despite what they're selling.
No,
we don't
side.
Feel like it's authentic. On Colton's side, but are against Tia, despite what they're trying to sell us. Isn't that people discerning the emotional truth?
No, because if it's the not. Whole thing's manufactured, it's moot. It doesn't matter who's on whose side. That's a different debate. Again, this whole debate is not, is Colton or Tia right? It's why is season 4 of Bachelor in Paradise more manufactured than a season that came before? It's not more manufactured. It's exactly the same, which is very manufactured. That's the debate.
Right, but then we started getting into can you discern whether someone's emotion on TV is real or not? And which I'm you saying can't. You can.
Because oh, no. 100%? Generally. So if,
no, not with 100% certainty, but generally.
Oh, no. And I think that eventually, if you're trying to have that broad an argument, then generally doesn't cut it, I would say.
I would split the difference. If I'm playing the NPR moderator of this presidential debate, I think you could split the difference on that particular issue. Half the people don't have the register to be able to fake emotions and come across as they would in a pressure cooking environment like an airport or a reality TV show. And I think Annalise and Jenna and even probably Jordan fit into that category. But then you have the people that are either very easy to manipulate or super self-aware and able to completely fake their emotions, which would probably be Duck on the aforementioned one and Leo on the after-mentioned one. Yeah, so they manipulate the people they can manipulate. They let the people who can act like Leo act, and then they let the people who are going to not do either kind of follow their path, and you hope that you end up with someone like Annalise.
I think that's a good way to split the difference, Craig, but it makes me think another portion of our conversations that I think we forget and we blur the line sometimes is that when we talk about relationships on The Bachelor, it's much different than real life. And so if you were to observe these things in real life, you could have different assumptions. You might have a different percent of being right or wrong about people's intentions. You add TV, like let's say a cinema verite documentary. Okay, that's supposed to be someone just observing, but you still have the artifice of film and editing and choices that were made. Then you add in the element of reality show, and that's a level of performance, right? This is all what our show's been about. And then you add in a legacy reality show where people have grown. And that's where I'm thinking, no, I would give people about a 5%, even the best experts, reality Steves and whatnot, have a 5% chance. Most people are going to be wrong all of the time with these things. It's just too many variables, too many things you don't know. And that goes to how, because I think it is manufactured, is always manufactured. And that's why I think people can't know. People can see what's presented on TV, think they have all the details and is exactly right, but they didn't see 99% of what was shot. They don't know 99% of the conversations. They can be wrong most of the time. I would be surprised if people were right most of the time.
Thank you, Governor Chris. Now,
yes, I will look for your votes in 2020.
For a response, we go to the senator from California, EZR. Although, I just want to append to all that, which was very insightful, that the one exception is Venmo, who I think acts exactly like he did on the show in real life when he's on a date.
I think that like a zeitgeist emotion is out there or whatever, some kind of overarching feeling people get is for a reason. We have some connected humanity as maybe that's even a point of dispute, but we have something that tips us off about genuicity or whatever he called it. I can't really like, you know, these aren't things that, again, these aren't the, you know, this is a feeling that is not just specific to women. I think it's specific to certain cultures as well. And I'm not trying to dissect it quantifiably, but unfortunately I'm having to push it there because there's no other way to quote unquote prove anything. But I don't feel, I've never felt this lied to, let's say. Mm. You know when you feel lied to.
I agree with that. And maybe that goes, not to go back to something I said but specifically, but I think this links back easier to what I said right at the beginning, which is this season feels more sinister. Maybe my use of the word sinister is really a wrapper for what you're saying, which is that we were feeling lied to. The whole three episodes feels different.
That's a good point. That's a good way to put it. And one thing I'm reminded of is I have come onto this franchise much later than both of you. So when I see, like, I just have a much shorter history when I'm comparing these things. So that could be why I don't really see these big differences that you pointed out both in Becca's season and now here. seems pretty consistent, but I've only watched for about a year now.
Well, let's, so throughout the rest of the season, I'm going to point out my bricks to my argument. But I don't think, like I said, I think no matter what, anyone could tear it down, because it is, in you know, it's me taking what I see and rolling with it in a way that I think is something people who have this kind of emotional, who can tap into an emotional truth solely, right, and not putting a lot of facts, because I don't have the facts. I wasn't there. I'm not a writer. I'm not a producer.
But then
I don't
it's know not me. An emotional truth, though, I would say, because I'm experiencing it differently. So why is it a truth?
Well, I'm not right. So an emotional, like I just feel right. Lowercase T.
All right. It's fake truth.
Craig's spinoff podcast.
Yes. Fake truth. Yes. Known unknown unknowns. Isn't that what where Donald Rumsfeld?
Someone in the bush. Yeah.
There's known knowns and then there's unknown unknowns. Oh, wait, there's known unknowns and unknown unknowns when you're describing war. Speaking of war, can we move on? Is this a good time to move on?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do both of our candidates running for president agree here?
I shake hands. You defended your position honorably, UCR.
If there's one thing presidential debates are really good at, it's moving on awkwardly.
I think it should be like The Proposal, where UCR just won. I'm standing awkwardly in the wings, yes. And I'm like, do I go now? I'm turning around. Yeah. It's okay. See ya.
So whoever loses the podcast each week has to stand in the background and decide when to leave.
Decide whether to clap or not. That's the best part. The guy started clapping at the end of the proposal. I was like, oh, me and the loser guy, the second to last guy. And I'm like, what is he doing?
Well, speaking of war, Jubilee, who's our having just left the military.
Yeah.
She comes down and she says, you can't have love without war. She meant it, I think, offhand. As something to say, a quip. But that's actually kind of like a really serious and weighty thing to ponder.
Just thinking very philosophical.
I've been up all night and day thinking about it. You can't have love without
war. That's weird. I don't know if that's true for everybody or even true at all.
True that it's a statement to think about, or true that you can't have love without war?
I mean, that's kind of like saying, unless I have conflict with you, I can't find that love because
But that's what I'm saying. It's like her statement is wrong.
Yeah, okay.
There's no question, in my opinion, it sounds like you agree.
Yeah.
That it's an odd thing to say. It's something that I imagine someone from the military might say, because their job is to prepare for war. For her to just kind of be walking down the stairs and quip that out, it came from somewhere, and that's a really difficult thing to get your head around. Is that what a lot of people think, that we have to have war, and war is somehow a good thing because it leads to love?
No, what? No. She meant it metaphorically, right? She meant it figuratively. She meant like there has to be some struggle with, like, a, you know, fairy tale.
No,
love.
No, I get
like,
that.
Like, you have to defeat the villain.
No, I totally understand. I think that's what's bugging me, is that to her, to the person that filmed it, to the person that edited it, and to most of America that watched it, they probably are like, yeah, whatever. But see, I dwell on these things. This is what I do. It pisses off my friends, and that's why I don't have many of them. It's because I dwell on things like this. It's like, is this what Americans think? The fact that that comment can be just said and dismissed, to me, is a big problem.
Because
if that's what people really think, like, we shouldn't make war something you can joke about. Especially since we've been in war most of all three of our adult lives.
Yeah, I don't know when we haven't been in war since.
She needs to steal someone's guy.
No, I know exactly what she meant, but that's not my point. See, this is why I lose friends, because I can't articulate my crazy way of thinking about this. It's not that she shouldn't use war as a metaphor, and it doesn't surprise me that she's using war as a metaphor. She in fact, internally, she was probably thinking, I'm the person who's known for being in the military, even though I don't fit the archetype, and so I'll say something clever about war, because that's what people expect of me. I mean, there's a million reasons that she said it, and I know exactly what she was referring to. It's just the whole notion is a phrase that can be said and just shrugged off that really bugged me.
I think there's lots of things to get mad at here. I hate that they keep calling it paradise and not Mexico, because that makes it, that brings it down. There's a lot of like,
okay, that's
insinuations
fair.
Of
that's a
American
great point,
centrism and, you know, American values at work with a lot of things that they say.
You just said right there in two sentences what I've been trying to say to people about lots of things I think about all these years. Good thing we're recording this. I'm gonna make a t-shirt out of what you just said. You're right. It sort of hints at this strange, I guess American centrism is a good way to put it. There's probably a more specific way of phrasing it, but it glosses over a systemic problem that what you're saying is there's lots of systemic problems that are being glossed over. Why pinpoint that one? If we're not going to pinpoint the other ones, and we're not going to make a whole podcast series out of identifying those, then there's no point in going after this specific one.
Yeah, I do feel that way. I just, you know, what do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I think you're both saying, I hate to have such a shrug of a comment here, but I was kind of enjoying what you're both saying, because I think you're both making, I can see what you mean, Craig. It's something I respect, your annoyance with car-centric or oil-centric kind of yes. comments. And that's kind of, I see this part of the Craig manifesto, the war comment just being made so casually. You know, I hate to say that, I like that it made such an impression on you, because, you know, it did not need, but when you say it, if that makes sense to me and ECR, yeah. then when you broaden that out to these other issues that paradise can bring up,
add some resonance to what you're saying, Chris, because you know, I appreciate you saying those things. I think a lot about media, because that's been my job for a long time, and how media mediates and things like that. And I think that's a core thing about the Bachelor Masters podcast, is we try to think about these kind of broader ways that what's being portrayed is maybe being received and the messages and stuff like that, blah, blah. Take Rebel Without a Cause, right? The movie with James Dean. It glorified car culture. I mean, even with the car going over the cliff, I mean, it made a generational shift. It and other movies.
I thought it was American Graffiti that like kind of...
Well, that one too. I mean, there's a whole pantheon of films that made cars super cool. And of course they did, because cars were cool. You know, muscle cars and all those kinds of things like that. And the whole Rebel Without a Cause, the Lost Generation, all this kind of... But it's cyclical, right? It's like you make cars cool and then cars become cool. And the next thing you know, the planet is veering out of control because of carbon emissions. And my point all along is that things shift very suddenly and unexpectedly when the narrative allows the shift to happen. So look at Obama, right?
Yeah.
So under George Bush, don't ask, don't tell wasn't even on the table. No gays in the military. Don't ask, don't tell is our policy. And we're going to like keep up a resistance against gays in the military kind of because we have George Bush. Obama comes in. Suddenly he's getting attacked for health care and all these other things. And he just got rid of don't ask, don't tell and said, you know what? The military is good at what it does. And if I tell them to accept gays in the military, they are. And that's exactly what happened. Now, obviously, with Trump, it's a little different. But that was a monumental shift that just sort of happened casually in the background because the narrative allowed it to. I've always contested that if like editors or writers or whatever just kind of like didn't include things consciously, then suddenly it wouldn't, right?
Yeah.
Like in a movie, a person has to go from point A to point B. There's a number of ways they could get there. They take a car. Well, what if they decided to just take the train? The scene would be exactly the same. Conversation with their friend in the car could happen on the train. If every show made those little subtle differences, then if the president came along and said, you know what, we're going to mandate electric cars, blah, 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 then people would be like, all right. You know, every little thing when it comes to adding public transportation or anything to do with transportation and the economy becomes this huge hot button issue. So it's those little flippant remarks like, you know, you can't have love without war. That just really grind at me because those add up.
Yeah.
The resistance to really important changes that we need.
It makes sense, Craig, because it's the fine line between, well, we're all in the American culture. So speaking from generally, you know, an American perspective, when things become mainstream and people don't think about the thing about something, when it's something is invisible, right?
Yes.
Now I know that we also come from, you know, I'm just talking about that war remark being from the like an American perspective, that there is that kind of thing that, oh yeah, someone makes a comment about war like that, I'm guilty of not thinking anything about that, and that could be tied up in race and other things also. I realize that, you know, there's certain kind of white issues that it's like, oh, I would have that kind of privilege to not think about X, Y, and Z. But in kind of just a cultural sense, I hear what you're, that it can be harmful on a mass medium like TV going out to the American public.
Right.
That's like, we're going to help make this issue further invisible, you know, because this person makes a loaded throwaway comment and yeah. it's gone. And okay, yeah, that's the norm thing.
I think humans are capable of a lot. Individuals are capable of doing a lot, especially when you have lots of people working on high budget productions like TV shows. A lot can happen. I've thought this, I've said it, it's gotten me into trouble. Easier, I'm sure you might have a good counterpoint, but there's a certain feminist notion that you do what you can, but you don't do more. And it's supposed to protect us from trying to do everything just for activists, trying to do it all and getting burnout and end up with mental health problems, which is a big problem. But I'm like, no, we actually are capable of doing a lot. If, for instance, we're going to demand that a transgender character on a TV show be played by a real life transgender person, then I'm going to demand that that transgender person rides the subway and doesn't drive. We can add that to the show's prospectus and it, you know, we can get it done. It's not that much more difficult to have someone ride a train than drive the car as to cast a transgender person in a transgender role. And it would have the same impact for transgender rights as it would towards reducing people's conscious and subconscious reliance on the oil hegemony.
ECR, before your comment, I just want to say this episode's going to get a star by it.
I hope so. Maybe we'll get a fourth iTunes review or something.
I like that this is like becoming Bachelor Masters extra even. Wow.
I think The Bachelor is a perfect example of that they don't give us more than they think we can handle on that counter side of what you said. You know, whenever they have some token, and I do say token, like not always, but whenever they have some token character on a show or whatever, they can't give them more than the necessary thing. So they have to make them the most straight-laced, because then people get upset with any little thing, right? You've experienced this, Craig, I guess, recently, about how any little comment on Twitter is just a justification for why are you treating those people like that. So you put a transgender person on a train and then they can't afford a car, you know.
Right.
You know what really made, I'm glad you kind of said that, because you know me, I also like taking the train, but I also like taking the bus, which is not as popular because it's not as romantic. And I will tell you, Craig, that there is a romanticism still associated, or maybe newly associated, with taking the metro or taking the train, but not necessarily the bus. The bus is still a poor person's game. And there was a story on, you know, Inside Edition or whatever, where some mom of a kid gifted the teacher a car because she rides the bus.
Right.
And the mom is crying and
these are the exact kind of stories I think about. Yeah.
Right. And that one got to me the way I guess other things get to you. The bus is not a punishment.
Right.
In fact, it's liberating. Like it actually lets you go wherever. You don't have to worry about a car getting towed or parking or fees, you know. And to me, I don't want to say I feel anything on the bus. I feel normal, but I don't understand there's also a lot of, you write it, right? You see people on there that are so proud of themselves for having this one time ridden a bus. But I also see those people that are just kind of annoyed or embarrassed or frustrated at the bus. I don't know. I guess we got into a transit oriented side note here, but I know that American TV does not try to take on more than one issue at a time because they think we can't hold two thoughts.
That's a great way of putting it. I mean, what you said about, well, if we put a transgender character on a train, then it's like, well, what? Why couldn't they drive? And that would bring on a conversation that might be a good, healthy conversation, but the way that the bureaucracy of it all is set up, it's going to resist even having that conversation. And that's been, I mean, I don't need to say it. Probably most of our listeners already think this, that America is incapable of having serious conversations generally. Yeah, and I guess just kind of round-tripping back, my big gripe is when these kind of flippant remarks like, can't have love without war get put in, which only perpetuates that problem. It even extends beyond what you're saying, EZR. It's not just what issues they don't want to talk about. It's the issues that people expect. We expect Jubilee to say that because she was in the military. It's like we're just... Mm.
You know, in those... If you run across someone from a different country and they'll have some saying and they'll translate the saying for you, or the other way around. They'll tell you why the saying you have is so offensive or the saying they have is so strange to us, because their sayings reflect their culture and their past. And, you know, America doesn't have a long culture or a long past, or like a big culture or a long past, rather. It's flippant to us because that is the always situation, right? There's no exceptions to the wars that we've had. There's no, wow, that was a big war. I mean, there are some countries that had one great war 70 years ago, 100 years ago, and are still, right, you know, in so much, not, I don't want to say disarray, but they're everything that they do relies, yeah, or like has to do with those wars or that war. Let's just use that, right, as an example. But there are so many things like that. A crop that's only available for 20 years and that's all they ate, and that becomes some kind of, you know, even something like Spam in Hawaii. I mean, it's reflective. I see what you're saying, that we can change the narrative and the culture by just not using those things, but it's too ingrained.
Well, this is why being a teacher, Republicans say, well, education is this liberal place where professors are mind-washing their, you know, our youth and stuff like that. But not really. It's just maybe liberal things come out of it, the trend, but really it's having complex conversations about nuanced things like the messages we get in pop culture. That's a super important thing to have. And colleges, to their credit, have been having these conversations more and more. The students that are being produced hopefully are becoming more ethical or aware. I mean, ethics obviously is different for every person. And that's super important. And it's no accident that the millennials are doing things that are freaking out the baby boomers, because it's so different and unconventional, but it makes sense. You know, maybe I won't drive today. I'll ride my bike, because not only does it help reduce our dependency on oil, and it makes me healthier, which reduces our healthcare costs. I mean, there's a whole, it's a super complex web of ideas that the millennials, I think, are more capable of implementing because they've been exposed to these conversations for a much longer time, as a credit to our education system.
Did you guys watch The Proposal?
No, I did not watch
it. I saw a little bit.
I am proud of myself for not watching.
Dang. Craig, get on it. And Chris, I know you probably watched the best part, the one I'm actually talking about.
Yeah.
There was actually so much reach within diversity, but that wasn't even the best part. They actually had real questions and deep, societal issues.
Deal-breaker questions?
Yeah. Father asking a question. It's kind of a deal-breaker question, I guess, because if the dad says no, then you're assuming no. But he asked, someone who works with kids, I don't think is an educator, maybe like an after-school person, what they thought about how do you teach others to discern between fake news and just the amount of information that's out. And it was well stated. It was there was a lot of, understanding. There was actually a question about why someone had two kids from a different partner. A lot of good issues that I don't think need to be necessarily solved or even gone into deeper on The Proposal, but they're worthy things to put out.
The fact that they were even brought into that context is an important step. We should do a supercut of his three questions, the dad's question.
And I started watching the episode again, not really paying attention, but the second, because it started off with a very privileged person, obviously, someone who was probably, she's a accomplished cello player, she's a doctor. Now, you got to know that a parent was behind that. Mm-hmm. If probably two, if not one, and they're probably very well off monetarily. And so I was kind of tuned out. But then when they became so conscious and were addressing things, and not just superficial, not just Facebook, I believe in this, yes, positive this, I thought it was actually a little bit better than the average.
That's great. Well, maybe this is a good place to wrap up, because that is a good moment, but it also really speaks to everything we've talked about this whole podcast episode, which is we're being very tough on the franchise and just sort of pop media in general. I think for all three of us in various parts of this whole episode, here we have this person in his own way helping shape future narratives that, you know, maybe someone's watching the episode that's going to go on and become producer or something like that, and they can affect change. And that's how change is affected.
They get inundated with that, and then that's the norm, and then they don't think twice about being a little more critical of these things.
Yes.
All right.
that was a good way to make it positive, Craig.
No, EZR. Yeah, EZR gets all the credit. Thanks for pulling me out of the trenches. And are you all? Are you both going to be friends after we stop recording here? Given everything that
EZR, we've had more intense debates about films offline, and we're fine. So, at least that's my side. You could be like, no, I hate you, Chris.
EZR's like, this is it. Everyone, this is the last episode that will feature Chris and EZR at the same time.
No, EZR, don't let me speak for you, but I think we both kind of like debate, don't we?
Yeah.
At least I do. I like it best when we get into the debate. So
I agree, and I also think it's a lot healthier because our points of view are different, but I don't think you're wrong. I just think my point of view
I couldn't say it better.
Now, we never did come to any sort of conclusions on Annalise or Lena or...
I don't even know who that is.
Is it Lena?
Caroline.
Lena. Yeah. Lena.
Who are you talking about?
The girl who was on Whippets the whole time that came in for Jordan.
Jenna.
Oh, okay. Jess.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
She was carrying around nitrous oxide or something.
Oh, yeah. She's insane. Well, she's the one that was on Ari the entire time. Remember, we wouldn't even see her. They just make out. They wouldn't even talk.
Right. Yes.
That's why we don't remember her.
That's right. Yeah. She has a good time in life.
Well, you know, Caroline has the opposite of Jenna. She would have been forgettable, except that she keeps pounding things home and making sure she's right, and she just seems like the indignant type. And I think Jordan said it best when he said, she's a stepmom that I would be okay with her getting me some pizza or something, but I don't want to date her.
Yeah, that was kind of what Chris mentioned a lot earlier, which is Jordan is doing a good job of resurrecting his presence, and it's those kind of comments that make a good villain.
Right. But that's the first one that felt authentic to me, where he was in a place, even the one where he was saying, I'm in a, you know, this is your order of girls based on the time of night.
Right.
I thought that was great, too. But those felt real him, right?
Like, yeah. Well, that's a whole another conversation for the next podcast, was the grossness of the Duck Jordan conversation there. But we'll leave that for another time.
Okay.
In the meantime, since I got our unofficial sponsor Hulu up here, I'm going to watch episode 6 of Castle Rock.
Oh. I'm back to Love Island.
Yeah, me too.
Best character.
All right.
Okay.
See you next week.
See you guys. Bye.